Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the May 26th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana, and Glenn Ring from Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
Well, let's begin, as usual, with a list of questions and topics that we might want to cover today. I think we'll start with you, Ellen Dearden. What's on your mind for the day?
Well, I thought a pretty exciting thing on Thursday was the big move in crude oil, with all months up over $50 a barrel. Didn't look like that could hold on the nearby months, but is that a precursor? Is it leading the corn? I guess that's my question.
And Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities.
Just kind of curious to see how we come in next week after a three-day weekend, if we're going to be able to maintain some of this positive momentum, or does it turn out like sometimes in history where a three-day weekend tends to be a turning point for the marketplace?
And Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises.
Well, I want to make sure that we take care or we deal with the sword of Damocles that's hanging over these markets called an outside month reversal in the dollar.
Well, let's start there. What do you think about it?
Well, back in early December, I wrote that 1st of May was my most likely time for the dollar to turn. I wanted it to be in the 92 area. We did. I chose that area because of time. I chose that area because it was a 38% retracement of the 2014-15 run, and that it was old highs, May 2004 high and late fall 2005 high. Coming down in that area and reversing at that point in time is an ideal place for that to be the end of the correction that began in March of 2015. It isn't a given that it's the end of the correction, but it may keep us sideways. But even if it does, then it opens the door to run back up, at least to retest resistance in the 100 area, and that could make for a tough summer. We got an outside month reversal up.
Correct.
And it isn't even critical that we follow through in June. Historically, when you go back and check the May turns in the dollar on a monthly chart, et cetera, July is the one that's more important. If we happen to go sideways in June and then start up again in July, we're probably renewing, we're at least getting ready to try to run back up to the 100 area in the dollar, if not renew the entire bull market. It is still my view that everything since March 2015 has been a correction in an incomplete bull market in the dollar. The question is, did the correction complete this year, or could we extend it for even another year? And that's possible, but not probable.
This would, in your opinion, be good or bad for commodity prices?
Be very bad for commodity prices, very bad. In fact, this extended correction of the dollar has thrown off my timing a little bit, or at least make me question it, because I had projected the basically the last fourth or third of the year in 2016 as being a target for major lows. And I do worry a bit that those might get pushed back even into 17. But people have asked me, does the, you know, things like La Nina, et cetera, affect my analysis? And the answer is no, it really doesn't. Do I respect that it's out there? Absolutely, I respect it. And I know that there's been times that you've been able to overpower the influence of the dollar, but if the dollar is in a bear mode, in 1983 is an example. We had the pick acres, we cut corn acres in half, and then we had the drought on it. The moment the marketplace decided the drought was done, a rallying dollar and corn just renewed the downtrend that had begun in 1980. So it just really bothers me right now that the pieces are out here, that we have huge spec long positions in things like soybeans and silver and some other areas. I think that there was a fundamental reason to rally beans, but I think that the speculation has been fevered, been a speculative fever in here, and I think we're in a very, very dangerous position for the balance of this year.
That's kind of a wet blanket to get things started with. I suspect that we might have differing opinions on this one. I think I want to jump to you, Ellen Dearden. Maybe you can tie what you're seeing in the crude oil into this just a bit, because we did top over $50 in those contracts, as you mentioned.
Yeah, we did, and really it was 3 months ago that everybody was talking about $18, $20 a barrel crude, and all of a sudden we came charging back. I think the fact that we have seen the what I would consider a pretty easy rally to the upside suggests that the economy might be a little better than what folks are looking at. It also is going to give oil producers a chance to improve their economies, because some of these countries have really been pretty strapped. You know, we've had a lot of political upset in Venezuela, for instance, and in Libya. And, you know, it seems to me that we've had kind of a tough go for a lot of folks. Now the wildfires in the tar sands area in Alberta, Canada, and all of a sudden things seem to be catching fire. I'm not saying we're really going to take off and go, because I thought we had a pretty subdued rally, but still, you know, we've been up since the very first part of January.
It's been clear, I think, and maybe you can give some insight to this, that the low price of crude had depressed substantially the price of commodities. Has the rally in the corn and the soybeans been part and parcel of the strength in the crude oil, and can it be maintained? So what I'm trying to ask is, did the very low price of crude oil artificially, relatively speaking, depress commodity prices for corn and soybeans? And now that that has been taken away, are we at a
You can say new plateau.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I wanted. Yeah, I wanted. Well, I didn't want to say new plateau. A new lower level bottom.
Mm-hmm. A new bias would be the way that I would suggest that we look at this market. I mean, we've had a pretty sterling run up in the soybeans, and not until the last 2 weeks have we seen much upside in the corn. But I think, given the upside breakout with the nearby corn now above this $4 area, I think we're open to some higher prices yet. And I think as long as crude oil maintains an up bias, that maybe we could get the specs involved back in the corn market like they've been in the bean market and take this thing and rock and roll.
Do you agree with that assessment, Bill Gentry, that there might be more upside for the corn?
Yeah, I really do. And I think she hit on a very key note, is the fund activity and the speculative participants in this marketplace have really exceeded expectations, both to the downside in some markets and now possibly to the upside in some markets. If you go back and look at the cattle market, we really got the cattle market beat up a while back when the funds were liquidating out of their positions, and they've been slow to recover. And I do think that the crude is what we consider kind of like one of the granddaddy of the commodity markets. And realistically, the beans have engaged based on some fundamental news and maybe some macroeconomic news. And now the corn is really in a good position. I personally would like to think that wheat would engage a little bit better, because the wheat market is the one that's really failed to cover shorts and get long. But one of these days, I hope that it will become a participant in that event as well. But realistically, I think corn does have some upside. We typically view the corn market as kind of a unit train. Once it changes directions and starts to roll, it's pretty tough to change directions again. So I'm cautiously optimistic we can add a little more premium to this market before it's all said and done.
What are the fundamental reasons that might support the higher prices?
I think the South American production picture right now is first and foremost. I think that their production is being challenged right now, Brazil in particular. I think the USDA and their government overestimated the crop previously. They've been backpedaling a little bit, bringing their production numbers down. The weather is somewhat adversarial. I think with them importing corn, I think that adds a whole new dynamic to the equation. If you remember when Russia stopped exporting wheat and actually imported some wheat several years ago, when you reverse a pipeline like that, it's very, very difficult to turn it back around. And I think realistically, the market is now engaging with the corn situation being what it is down there. It's probably going to take a couple of crops to rectify that situation. And that really underpins the value of corn on the world market. It may not necessarily all come from us, but it does raise the world value level at least a touch or two.
Ellen Dearden, do we need to couple this with the idea that we're getting really late into the month of May, now into June, and that we might, in fact, because of the lateness and also because of the higher price of soybeans, lose some corn acres in the United States?
Yeah, we've probably lost some corn acres. Look at southern Indiana and southern Illinois. I mean, they are just still wet, 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 and I think they'll be hard-pressed to be putting in any kind of corn crop. We'll see a lot more projected corn acres dropped also in Ohio and Michigan. Another thing that we haven't really touched on the corn side of things is the news that China was going to change its policy on its corn reserve. You know, they talked, six weeks ago, that they were going to let loose of their corn reserve and, you know, to keep prices at a world level rather than their level. And, you know, that the market went, yeah, okay, sure. And that didn't seem to affect things. They put out for auction about 2 million metric tons this week, and it'll be interesting to see if there's any takers.
Well, those are the things that we're dealing with. Now, I'm going to come back to you, Glenn Ring, on this one. Does the discussion we have in the same way that the dollar that you were talking about got moved down, kicked down the road a little bit, does this kick down the road for you the change in the marketplace at all that you told us about up front?
I don't think that I even have an answer on that yet. I need to let the market tell me. What I'm walking into is, I think, a fairly classic scenario where we've got a lot of good news as we walk into two of the most dangerous weeks of the year or periods of the year in corn for historical tops on new crop. And that's next week and the June 17th to 27th period. You have your majority, when you've peaked this late, you've had those two narrow periods have had the majority of your tops. Now, it doesn't mean that there's other months that haven't had more tops. That's not what I'm getting at. But those specific weeks are the two most dangerous weeks or periods that you want to walk into. And we've got some good news in here. And, you know, I was reviewing for this where we could be in the corn market. I had put out my ideal scenario was to rally July and December corn into the 420 area next week. Would be my optimal setup to be looking at potential sales in the corn market. I'm struck by how this week reminds me, not of the entire situation, but of this week reminds me of 1984 in the soy complex. And because it did, and I'll get back to that, I went back and reviewed what did corn do in 1984. Well, soybeans topped on May 25th, which was the Friday before Memorial Day. Corn and new crop beans didn't finish topping until, I think, the 21st of June. Not unlike a year like this. Other years I've seen where you've had rallies come just about the way we have in corn, right up into this Memorial Day and first week of June window. So it's a dangerous time, and I think that we finally have gotten the news to follow the rallies and give people reasons that make it okay to have rallied. And I don't have a problem with that. Because my worry this winter when I did live meetings was I had way too much company on the bear side, you know, and my stuff isn't opinion. My stuff is what has the market done historically, and we haven't done anything that has broken bear modes, long-term bear modes in soybeans, soybean oil, corn, wheat, soybean meal has, but shoot, in the mid-80s, meal bottomed in 1985 and the complex didn't bottom until 1987. So, Sure.
Wait. I have a question about that. You're not going to consider what has happened in Argentina and in Brazil with the soybean crop as a change? Of course, they weren't around at that point. That's not something that would have changed that.
The market price will tell me if we've changed into something different, and we have not destroyed the bear mode. We're about to find out.
Oh, but you're going to have to define that for me, because we rallied more than $2.
Until you clear a monthly reaction high on soybeans, and the last monthly reaction high is up above $12, I'm still technically in a bear mode. The pattern of lower monthly highs and lower lows has not been broken. And I've seen it come back to bite me if I don't respect that. Now, there's more to the soybean story. I did an entire newsletter, an 8-page newsletter, a couple of weeks ago about the soybean outlook. And I said, if you're bullish or if you're bearish, history says that between now and the 1st of August, we're about to probably get tanked. If we're bullish, if this was the first wave up in a long-term bull scenario, history says there's a good chance we'll retrace, we'll get back 75% of what we've gone up between now and early August. If it's not, we're going to new contract lows, if it's still a bear scenario. But that's just what history tells me, and that's what I run off of. To me, people have said, well, are you going to change because of, like, the things you stated or La Nina, et cetera? And I said, you know, from 2008 on, I've ridden a horse that got me through the Kentucky Derby just fine. Now I'm just worried that mine isn't one of them that died at the Preakness. So, but I'm going to keep riding this horse until the marketplace tells me not to ride it. And, yes, I got to tell you, we haven't changed anything.
You didn't give me your corn scenario, so you started there, but we didn't get to it. What is it?
Well, what I'm saying is in corn is that it kind of did in this sense, that corn peaked in 1984 around the 20th of June when beans peaked this week. So they don't have to peak together. All I'm watching for right now is to see if old crop beans and meal peaked back today. Follow-through losses tomorrow probably have. More likely, I feel like it's something to do with either you or WILL, and it's March of 2009 again. I can call a top today tentatively in corn and beans and meal, pending upon what comes next. And even as I teach them at 3-day workshops, the significance of a day like today is determined by what follows. And if we have follow-through losses tomorrow, or, in fact, if we're repeating something similar to 84, we're probably going to cut loose on the downside next week on old crop. My concern is this. Let's take the fundamentals and throw them into the mix. And hear me out before anybody wants to shoot it down. A 300 billion bushel carryover, of course, I'm not a fundamentalist, so I'm not supposed to know that. 300 billion bushel carryover is still much larger than what we've been dealing with in recent years. Second of all, how much is the change in fundamentals worth on the rally? That's a rhetorical question because I don't know. So thirdly, there is no, it's not subjective at all that large speculators have been a huge participant in this. As near as I can tell, they've matched their record levels. Now, I'm not sure about that's right on the data because I don't have all the COT commitment traders data back, but they've been very, very high on this. Large speculators, as another example, at the highest level they've been in silver as far back as I can go, and that's 25 years. So what I'm telling you is that we have a largely late, we at least in part, have a speculative event. Finally, the way the meal market was rallying, it told me somebody was caught short. July meal has had open interest drifting down as we've rallied. That's typical of somebody that's getting their brains blown out, to put it conservatively. And then whenever that capitulation occurs, you'll often find the market has no support below it. And that's what worries me right now is that we just absolutely shatter the old crop beans and meal, and people become impressed with how well, you know, corn and wheat and cotton and stuff like that hold for a few weeks, because they may very well, because I thought, you know, when you looked at cotton today and recently and wheat today, I really wondered if we weren't starting to reverse some spreads big time. So that's kind of what I'm looking at here.
We definitely were reversing spreads, the bean wheat spread today. And I mean, I thought that was a major factor. Just to throw out another idea here in the old crop beans. When is the CFTC or the exchange going to come and force a liquidation only in this July meal contract? That, I think, would be the kiss of death, and somebody's going to be have a tip-off that that's going to happen.
Do you think they're going to force that, or are they holding out hoping they don't have to?
I think at this stage of the game, they're hoping they don't have to, that the market will take care of itself. But I don't know.
Yesterday, you know, I don't usually use very intraday stuff for long-term work, but I do get sensitive to when I'm looking for a potential turn week or turn time. Do you notice yesterday how right on you had MOC buying in July meal?
Right.
And today you sold off, no buying at all. I really was suspicious that we were capitulating last night, overnight, and such. And of course, if we are, we're probably going to pull the plug on the old crop beans and meal fairly quickly. And I emphasize old crop because history actually says that, you know, tells us that the spread activity can often help support things. I mean, we had actually crashed beans, I think, around a buck in 84 from a lower high than where we are now, and rallied like 3 days in the end of the 15th of June, rallied like 3 days, and new crop beans actually scored a new contract high before turning down and joining them. So I could see a lot of the great thing about this is if old crop starts to collapse and we see the others be buoyant, producers can look at that and say, you know, I better at least I can seriously consider a bird in the hand in here, and that this isn't necessarily a sign of something quote unquote good that they're being supported. At least that's what history tells me.
At what point in time is the Mr. Farmer going to sell his old crop beans in the Western Corn Belt and beans and corn in the Central and Western Corn Belt?
You've got me, because if they haven't pulled the plug now, I'm not sure what it's going to take to get them to go.
I think that the farmer was convinced by the elevator and or his banker that $4 corn was very elusive. And now that he's seeing $4 corn in a lot of basis areas, he's getting pretty tight-fisted with old crop supplies.
And I would say right here in our local area, we've seen the first indications that maybe basis is starting to falter. Not significantly, but I think with the corn above $4, the basis softening up slightly starts to tell you that it could be, you know, approaching that value level that's going to cut some bushels loose.
Well, I think
remind me where you're at.
Correct. He's in Lafayette, Indiana.
Okay.
We did see some movement of corn, but I noticed that we've got about a nickel better basis for the first half of June versus this last week of May. So that says to me that the book is not that, you know, does not extend very far out. Might have bought some stuff this week, but doesn't go very far.
I will tell you, just from simple observation over here, is I noticed a lot of truck activity in the last 2 weeks over here that I don't see this week so far and didn't see prior to that. But somebody was moving grain over here. Now, it might have been because the rain had come back, too. But so, you know, we were getting a distinct increase in rain, in just that kind of traffic around me. And it's lightened back up, and we've rained again, so there's no reason that the trucks wouldn't be moving. But so I think on the short term, I would agree with your observation. I think we saw a burst of movement, but, you know, they may not be bought out very far.
So just to clarify on the over here, because you have moved in the last couple of years, you were in Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids area. Most people will remember that. And now you're in Council Bluffs, which is just outside of Omaha, to this side of Omaha. So you're on the east side of the city, right?
And major rail line here, four elevators. So I get to see truck traffic when I'm out and about and such. So I can say we've definitely had a pickup for a couple of weeks in here, but I talk to bankers over here and others in the market business over here that deal with farmers, and we're not sure what it's going to get them to move. I guess some of them are saying they're going to move. Some of them move because of financial stress, but the bankers were a year ahead of them, ahead of the Eastern Corn Belt. I mean, they had the guys kind of towing their lines a little bit more over here already. But I think the general observation is when they can see the next crop, it's when they're going to get most distressed. I am worried about the second half. One of the things that I think this marketplace better needs to worry about, I'm not saying that it's going to come to pass, but what if La Nina doesn't develop, or what if it doesn't develop in a timely manner? What if we end up with, if somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Alvin Taylor came out yesterday with a 170 corn projection, and that kind of floored me in the way things were going this year. So what happens if we have a good crop, if we don't have all the problems develop or continue to develop?
Bill, you mentioned that the holidays were a time of change. Does what has been outlined so far, and I'll roughly put it as old crop fails, new crop hangs on for a while, and then we figure out what the weather forecast is in June and July for it. Does that make sense to you?
It sure does. I think realistically, you know, the three-day weekends are a lot of times where people can go out and assess the situation, and then they come back with a fresh perspective and cast their vote on Tuesday. I think realistically, we have not knocked down the factors of production for new crops, so you can't take all the premium out just yet, but you certainly could back the spreads up. We're being told that there's ample carryout, at least for the time being, so we could back those spreads off, and as I say, we probably need to maintain some risk premium in the new crop months until we get some of the factors of production. That probably is going to carry us through pollination, maybe even a little bit further, and wait and see what those, you know, midsummer months are for the corn crop, and maybe what late July and August weather looks like for beans. So yeah, I think the new crop months definitely should carry a little bit of a premium a little further, and we could back the old crop new crop spreads off a little bit before too long.
Anything to add to that, Ellen Dearden?
We may not need as much risk premium for weather issues if we've got a tremendous number of old crop bushels in the Western Corn Belt. That is a concern to me, that my upside objective has been higher than Glenn's on the Dease corn, but I'm just wondering whether I need to scale back a look at 440 to something a little lower, because I think there will be old crop bushels carried into new crop.
Yeah, so you might want to scale back. I know that when I talked to Dan Zwicker on Thursday afternoon, if a breakout would come to fruition on the corn, he was suggesting you just take the range, which I think is 54 cents, and add it in, and so you get something above 450. But 420, 440, and 450, I know they're big differences in those numbers, but they could top out fairly quickly. And I suppose, would all of you be of a mind that if we get into one of those ranges, whichever one is you're comfortable with, that you want to make sales? I think, Glenn, you already told me that was the case. How about you, Bill Gentry?
Certainly would. And I think I would also point out that I would probably approach it with, we've got 30 or 40% done for some guys. I would probably be looking at some bought put options because of the potential volatility later on. The market seems to have expressed itself in a little bit more positive way than we would have thought, let's say, 2 months ago. And I'm respectful of that. But the bottom line is buying some put options to protect that value is an odds-on favorite with us. And that way you know what your risk is, and you've chalked the wheels on the new crop stuff.
I checked what Elwin Taylor's number was from yesterday, and he and Bob Wisner, of course, who was Iowa State Extension specialist in crops and yields, put it at 170, and they did give a price projection in the December contract at harvest. So that price projection actually is 168 bushels the acre, $3.50 bushel December corn futures. So that's what they're thinking at this point. So that number is pretty big. However, it all depends a bit on the weather forecast and whether El Nino continues to fade, La Nina comes in, and what the weather might be in the month of July. So lots to worry about. Yes, I guess would be the case, wouldn't it be, Ellen?
I would think so. There's a lot of moving parts at this stage of the game on new crop. That's kind of where I am. But I am worried that there's going to be old crop corn carried into new crop.
Is there anything we haven't discussed that maybe we ought to at this time?
We haven't discussed wheat.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And it moved sharply on Thursday. Tell me about why.
Well, I think there were two reasons. One was unwinding of some bean wheat spreads. I thought that was probably a big factor. But the second factor was talk about finding rust in Indiana wheat fields. I don't know why that should be a huge surprise. I am picking up two things. One is Asia feeding wheat. I noticed that South Korea passed on a corn tender this week and took some wheat instead. And I'm also picking up actual feeding of wheat right now by feedlots in Oklahoma and the southwest portion of Kansas, and I think that will pick up. Once they get a new thing in the ration, i.e. wheat, they like to stay there for anywhere from 40 to 65 days.
Might it be that the wheat problem, and I don't know whether you've talked to Sherman recently, I suspect you have, Bill, and he had not really rolled, and I don't know whether he was able to roll this week to plant or not, but if that's a rust problem in Indiana related to disease issues with a wheat crop in Indiana, Illinois would be pretty good sized soft red winter wheat growing regions east of the Illinois River or the Mississippi River. Would it all be related to kind of the wetness in those areas of Ohio, Indiana, and parts of Illinois, that southern part of Illinois?
You bet. And we also, we've got an agronomist that works in our office and talked with him this morning, and he's talking about some additional rust pressures. And the guys are treating it fairly aggressively, but it still seems to be standing in there. So, you know, I think the disease issue is a little bit of a component. And I think a lot of guys that don't have a really good wheat crop are actually tearing it up and thinking about putting out another crop. So, you know, that there's some of that going on, and that could be supported for the wheat going forward.
So the question is, has wheat have a seasonal bottom?
Well, it certainly can. I mean, there's precedence for making lows in May in wheat and some pretty hefty rallies. And I don't have wheat as being necessarily part and parcel with corn and beans right now. So, in fact, I'm really impressed at the moment. If the month were done with July Kansas City wheat, 455 is a huge monthly support area, pivot area. And we jabbed down to 441. And right now, you know, we're sitting today right in the low 460s. Wheat may be trying to bounce off of this thing, but you know, I just wonder if wheat would go back into a consolidation mode on a monthly chart if we had spread start to reverse. Because I mean, just everybody whipped up on wheat. So now, and the other side of that is, if you go through 441 on wheat, there isn't much to stop Kansas City wheat till you get close to $3. So that's the bad news of this thing. Look, there's an Achilles heel to my outlook. To my scenario, it's that this turn in the dollar doesn't hold. That's a pretty big Achilles heel. I mean, if you start mirroring soybean charts, you start certainly on a weekly chart of beans, even though corn and cotton are more sensitive to the dollar historically. I'm talking about year on year. Beans are basically mirrored from last fall the dollar. The commodity indexes, like the Bloomberg commodity index, people are thinking it's holding pretty well because you know with the crude oil, et cetera. But the Bloomberg index quit rallying when the dollar turned up. But if the rally in the dollar, if the dollar isn't turning back up, and if it doesn't recover back to 100, then a lot of bets are off. And I've warned people as much as a year ago. I said, if we don't happen to be down into late 16, it's probably bad news later in the decade because we still haven't beaten out all of the willingness to produce. And we've bailed out people for not marketing well. But on a shorter term relative to that basis, could I see us be up for, you know, 12, 18 months? I certainly could. If the cycles aren't on track, something's off. I just have a lot of cycles focused in late this year. Makes me doubt that. Let me throw out one more quick thought. We should know this. We have had, in the last 46 years, we have had 8 times that old crop beans peaked in May. 6 of those years, you had not seen the calendar year lows yet in old crop beans. And this week's the most common time. So if they can rally beyond this week, then I start being more impressed.
So you are just basically on the cusp here on the beans. Think that beans are really the pivot point to see.
The game is now, yes. I think the game is right now. Alternative is the third week in June also, but really this is the most dangerous time.
Mm-hmm.
And you think today could have been the start of the turn?
Yes, I do.
What would give you confirmation?
I can be a wise acre and say break the winter lows. I know for sure. But yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good confirmation.
Everybody wants absolutes in this business, and I'd love to have them too. I don't want July meal below 401. And if I'm a if I'm bullish beans, you don't want soybeans underneath Tuesday's low, 1043.5 on the July. Now that's a bit away, but look, if I get a weekly buying is auction in here, or if we start down next week, my odds just start to soar. Because I play probabilities. I'll be open with it. I'm selling beans tomorrow on a stop. If they go down, I'll put a stop above today's high. I get stopped out, fine. Won't be the first or last time.
There you go. Have a good one, guys.
Ellen Dearden is from AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, joined on this May 26 edition of Commodity Week by Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Council Bluffs, Iowa, and Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities from Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.